Hi, I'm Steve Sheath, president of First Affirmative Financial Network and producer of the SRI in the Rockies Conference, the premier annual gathering of the sustainable and responsible investment industry in North America. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Hunter Lovins. Hunter will be a keynote speaker at the 20th annual SRI in the Rockies Conference on October 27, 2009. Hunter Lovins is the founder and president of Natural Capitalism Solutions. Trained as a sociologist and attorney, Hunter co-founded the Rocky Mountain Institute, which he led for 20 years, and was once named as a Millennium Hero of the Planet by Time magazine. She's consulted for scores of companies and governments worldwide and serves as an advisor to the energy minister of the government of Afghanistan, among others. She's also the founding professor of business at the Presidio School of Management, one of the first accredited programs offering an MBA in sustainable management. Hunter, it's really a pleasure to have you with us today.
Steve, thanks for having me on.
There's always so much to talk about when you and I get together. So let's start with, you know, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us about Natural Capitalism Solutions. What do you do? How do you do it? How are you making a difference?
I hope we're making a difference. What we do is work with companies, communities, countries. I was just in Germany with the German chancellor, with the heads of all of the major auto companies, their major suppliers. I, as you mentioned, advise the energy minister of Afghanistan. Last week I was in Asia giving a presentation on a book we've just finished, which was written on behalf of the United Nations, on how to transform industry in Asia to make it sustainable. So we work all over the world. Last year, Natural Capitalism consulted with companies we reckon representing at least 3% of U.S. GDP, and that includes some very large ones like Walmart, but it also includes a lot of small companies and small communities. We are just releasing a product called Solutions at the Speed of Business, which will help small business people cut their carbon emissions, cut their energy use, cut their waste in ways that are profitable to the business. We are ever more convinced that if we're going to get out of this recession, it's going to be through these green technologies, through innovation. If you go back to the first industrial revolution when we invented commerce using water power to make textiles, iron, moved on to steam power and train steel. Britain was the nation that innovated those technologies and ruled the world. The next wave of innovation after that was electricity and cars. The U.S. was big in that, and to some extent Germany, and the industrial might of these countries gave them preeminence in the world economy. The U.S. took us on to the space race and petrochemicals. The last wave of innovation was the IT revolution, gave us all these little devices in our pocket. What's the next wave of innovation? I think if we want a dynamic, growing industrial economy, it is going to be innovation around these green technologies. How do we meet people's needs for comfort in their homes, green buildings? How do we provide access and mobility, whether it be by video conferencing or by super efficient cars? Yesterday in Germany, I was in an all-electric smart car, and the day before, I was in an all-electric Porsche. And let me tell you, good German engineering combined with the best of green technology, and you have a very sweet car. And I was talking with the auto execs about people don't necessarily want a car. What they want is access and perhaps even mobility. And there are many ways to deliver that, and that these whole systems approaches to solving the problems facing us can deliver great prosperity for companies, high quality of life for people, and at the same time solve these really scary problems facing us, like the fact that we're losing every ecosystem on the planet and we're in a global climate crisis.
So what kind of tools do you use, and what kind of tools do you take with you when you go visit companies and governments? How are you helping them? You know, this all sounds really good, and obviously, you know, I'm your choir. I'm the center of the choir. And my guess is the folks that assemble with us at SRI in the Rockies are also part of the choir. But, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that aren't yet in the choir, and I suspect that those are the people that you're really dealing with, and they're the most important leverage points, right?
Companies, I believe. Well, there are many leverage points. The whole SRI field proved that individuals acting out of their highest sense of what they believe in, what matters, can move the world. The first values-based investors believed that they were going to take a lower rate of return. In fact, in many cases, they are getting at least the same or a superior rate of return. The fact that the SRI community exists enabled the Carbon Disclosure Project to go to the, first of all, 500 biggest, now 1,800 biggest companies on Earth, send them a survey saying, what's your carbon footprint? For a couple of years, everybody ignored it. Now over 80% of the biggest companies on Earth are answering this survey because the Carbon Disclosure Project is backed up by institutional investors who have been convinced by the SRI movement that this is the way to invest, representing over $55 trillion in assets. That's a massive accomplishment by the SRI community. So I don't mind talking to the choir, but I spend most of my time talking to very skeptical business leaders who care first and foremost whether there's a business case. And interestingly, we now have over 15 separate studies from the sorts of wild-eyed environmental radicals like Goldman Sachs and McKinsey showing that the companies that are the leaders in environment, social, and good governance policy have 25% higher stock value, the fastest growing stock value, are well protected from value erosion even after the collapse, and even after the collapse have market capitalization averaging $650 million more than their competitors. Conversely, the worst performing companies in the economy are most likely to have nobody in charge of sustainability. This has gone from a, nice to have a bit of greenwashing to a business imperative.
Yeah, you and I talked a lot when we were last together about Walmart. You know, and as you are aware, there's some skeptics out there that look at Walmart and its newfound leadership, if you will, in the green business revolution and question it. I understand, and I believe you make the case very strongly, that they're doing it because it's good business. It's good for their business. But is it, you know, is this shift in the field really good for us all?
I think it's extremely good for us all, and it is imperative that we talk to the people we believe are our enemies. And many people have believed that Walmart is the evil empire. Well, surprise, Walmart's entry into this sphere is literally changing the face of business. Walmart has 60,000 to 90,000 suppliers. Last October, they rolled out the first version of what they're calling their sustainability scorecard or index, just 15 separate categories that they are now requiring their suppliers to answer questions about, such as, are you measuring and managing your carbon footprint? Are your supplies, are your use of resources sustainable? What's your impact on your community? And the self-righteous among us will snort and say, yeah, well, what's Walmart's impact on its community? And indeed, this is a company in profound transition from a very successful, if very thoughtless, exploiter of people and resources and community to a company that now recognizes that it can make more money by, first of all, squeezing out waste, which is the first principle of natural capitalism, but more profoundly implementing at least the beginnings of what we call radically sustainable manufacturing, just really looking at the whole system within which they exist. And Walmart is recognizing that, again, this is just good business. Now, Walmart got into this in part for the right reasons. Lee Scott and Rob Walton spent some time with people like Ray Anderson of Interface and Jim Ellison of Blue Sky and a number of environmentalists and listened to the environmental argument that Walmart's impact on the planet was not a positive one. But they also got into it for very solid business reasons. Their stock value had declined something like 34% since Lee Scott had taken over, and they were the most reviled company in the economy. They were run out of Germany because German citizens just wouldn't shop there. And they realized that there was an enormous cost to all of this distrust and dislike. And they set about very consciously to be better corporate citizens and have a lighter footprint on the planet. Now, is Walmart green? No, of course not. They're maybe a percent or two of the way to where they need to get to, but their goals are pretty aspirational. 100% renewable energy, carbon neutral, and sell only sustainable products. Eliminate waste. And they're finding that eliminating waste is saving them billions of dollars a year.
Yes, and they're not the only ones. And in some ways, you know, your firm, Natural Capitalism Solutions, is about the business case. It's about showing how capitalism can save us all, right?
Capitalism is our middle name. And we firmly believe in the power of market mechanisms to solve the very serious problems facing us. But we also recognize that there is a very important role for government. Markets, you know, go back and read Adam Smith, markets allocate scarce resources efficiently in the short term. They were never intended to take care of grandchildren. That's our job. That's the job of people in a democracy. It's also the role of civil society, of NGOs, of activists, to raise the issues, to lay out a forward-thinking agenda, to be the honest brokers between the market and the government. And we need a real discussion about how does one govern? How do we come together to solve these sorts of problems? So again, I come back to the SRI world, where some activists put together a means by which individuals can take whatever money they have, can use that resource for positive change, and make the point to the companies that there are people out there who are watching them. Companies like even Exxon, which have thumbed their noses at there is climate change, that we have to do anything about it, that social responsibility is the role of a company. Owning Exxon stock and voting it can be a very powerful thing to do.
Indeed. So you've been listening to Hunter Lovins, founder and president of Natural Capitalism Solutions, which educates and creates innovative, practical tools and strategies to enable companies, communities, and countries to become more sustainable. Hunter will be speaking at the 20th anniversary SRI in the Rockies conference on October 27th. Hunter, thank you so much for your time today. I really look forward to seeing you in Tucson.
Steve, thanks, and thanks for all that you do.